Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Thursday, December 20th, 2018. Coming up this hour,
global stocks tumble following the Fed decision.
The yen strengthens, the dollar weakens, and oil tumbles.
Yields fell, stocks fell.
We have to watch the shape of the yield curve and credit spreads.
Markets were looking for a more flexible Fed, a more we feel your pain kind of Fed.
The Senate has approved a temporary spending bill to avert a shutdown, and facing a bipartisan backlash, President Trump defends his decision to pull out of Syria. I'm Pat Carroll. That's ahead.
I'm Rob Buschka. Ahead in sports, the Nets win their seventh straight, the Knicks fall hard in Philly, and the Yankees had a visitor.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak. On Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good morning, I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. Global stocks are falling after yesterday's Fed decision. It is coming up to 6:01 on Wall Street, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures are down about 2 points now. Dow futures down 17. NASDAQ futures are up 3. The DAX in Germany is down 1%. CAC in Paris down 1.5%. The FTSE 100 down 0.5%. Nikkei 225 in Japan fell 2.8%. The Hang Seng in Hong Kong down 0.9%. 10-year Treasury down 3/32, yield 2.76%. Yield on the 2-year 2.65%. NYMEX crude oil down 3.7% on $1.78 to $46.39 a barrel. COMEX gold is up 0.2%, up $2.80 to $12.59.20 an ounce. The euro, $1.1475, and the yen, 111.72. Nathan.
Karen, yeah, global equity markets are reacting violently to the Fed decision. Chairman Jerome Powell suggested he will be more cautious about raising interest rates next year, but investors wanted more.
The economy may not be as kind to our forecasts next year as it was this year. History attests that unforeseen events as the year unfolds may buffet the economy and call for more than a slight change from the policy projections released today.
Equity investors were not pleased by those projections, with the Fed's dot plot calling for 2 more rate hikes next year.
But Scott Miner, chief investment officer at Guggenheim, says Powell's plan to continue reducing the central bank's bond holdings is what sparked real concern.
The minute he eliminated the possibility of adjusting the pace of the size of the Fed's balance sheet, the market took a decided crackdown. Yields fell, stocks fell, and bank loan ETFs, the high-yield ETFs, both cliffed at that moment.
Some analysts had hoped that recent market turbulence would convince the Fed to stop rolling off its balance sheet.
And Chairman Powell repeatedly called the outlook for next year positive, though policymakers did lower their forecast for growth to 2.3%. Jeffrey Rosenberg is chief fixed income strategist for BlackRock.
Powell put the put away, or he restruck it lower. Markets were looking for a more flexible Fed, a more we feel your pain kind of Fed, and he didn't give any of that.
Though Powell did shy away from saying whether the central bank would eventually boost rates into restrictive territory to prevent the economy from overheating.
Going forward, policymakers need to provide more clarification on plans for their balance sheet. That's according to Glenn Hubbard, former chairman of the Council of Economic Advisers.
I think the Fed, first of all, has to become a little bit clearer to the markets and the public about where the balance sheet should be. And then the second is to acknowledge that we are shifting to a more quantitative tightening regime and try to give a sense of what's the net tightening between the funds rate changes and the balance sheet changes. So I think it's a communication issue for the Fed.
Powell did acknowledge some downside risk to the central bank's outlook, saying there's a mood of angst about growth.
Still, he mostly downplayed the implications of market volatility, and that has Bob Dahl, chief equity strategist at Nuveen Asset Management, worried the Fed could be making a mistake.
The Fed has been a huge friend of the stock market, and they're now, a little bit of an enemy and probably become worse of an enemy before this is all over. So we have to watch the shape of the yield curve and credit spreads, and the balance sheet of the Fed has a lot to do with that.
Following Powell's remarks, the S&P 500 finished the day down 1.5%, while the NASDAQ slid more than 2%.
And that negative sentiment is spreading across Europe this morning. Bloomberg's Sebastian Salek joins us live from London with details. Good morning, Sebastian.
Good morning, Karen and Nathan. Well, stocks are falling for a fifth day in six. You've got almost every sector lower on the Stock 600. The utilities just sat more or less flat. But under the most pressure are the miners, this after the Fed failed to provide relief for risk assets. But particularly affected are the aluminium producers. You've got the likes of ArcelorMittal and Novo Nordisk there, as the US says it's lifting sanctions on N-Plus in the next 30 days. Live in London, I'm Sebastian Salek, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Seb, thank you. Stock in Asia tumbled today with both the Fed and the Bank of Japan weighing on sentiment. Bloomberg's Juliet Sally joins us with details from Singapore. Good morning, Juliet.
Good morning, Nathan and Karen. A decision by the Bank of Japan to keep its monetary policy unchanged disappointed investors, boosting the yen to its highest level against the dollar since October. The topics closed lower by 2.5% in Tokyo. The index now 21% down from its January peak and on track for its worst December since 1959. But Rusal shares jumped in Hong Kong after the US said it's poised to lift sanctions on the aluminium producer as Russian billionaire Oleg Deripaska cut his stake. In Singapore, I'm Juliet Sali, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Juliet, thank you. In Sweden, the krona is strengthening after the country's central bank raised rates for the first time since 2011. Economists had been split on whether policymakers would hike. Sweden's repo rate now stands at -0.25%.
And we have another central bank decision on tap for today, though it's likely to prove uneventful. Bloomberg's Lucy Meakin reports from London.
The Bank of England is set to announce its final policy decision of the year, with Brexit uncertainty remaining high, less than 100 days before the UK leaves the European Union. That's likely to keep the central bank's hands tied. All but one of 61 economists in a Bloomberg survey predict officials will keep rates unchanged at 0.75%. In London, Lucy Meakin, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Lucy, thank you. And oil is falling as the Fed stokes fears about economic growth at a time when investors face a supply glut. Checking prices now, NYMEX crude oil is down 3.6% on $1.73 at $46.44 a barrel. Brent is down 3.7% at $55.15. Futures are now little changed. They've been moving around a bit. S&P futures down half a point. Dow futures down 11. NASDAQ futures up 6. And the 10-year Treasury down 3/32, yield 2.76%. Straight ahead, the latest world and national news. This is Bloomberg.
Thanks, Karen. It's 6:07 on Wall Street, and Pat Carroll's here to tell us what's going on in the world. Good morning, Pat.
Good morning, Nathan. The Senate has approved a temporary funding plan to keep the government open through early February. Senator Jeff Flake was in the chair for last night's voice vote.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The motion is agreed to.
The legislation will avoid a partial government shutdown Friday if the House approves it and the president signs it. But members of the conservative House Freedom Caucus say the president's political base will be angry if he signs a bill without funding for a border wall. Skeptical lawmakers say they want answers about President Trump's decision to declare victory over Islamic State militants in Syria and to order a full withdrawal. Bloomberg's Bob Moon reports.
The first mistake, says Republican Senator John Cornyn, was surprising Congress. Now lawmakers from the president's own party are determined not to let him make that mistake worse. Senators Lindsey Graham and Marco Rubio fear a vacuum.
If we do, in fact, withdraw, the biggest winners are going to be Iran, ISIS, Assad.
I don't know who advised this decision to be made, but it's a terrible mistake.
Indeed, Democrat Tim Kaine questions if it's being done on the Pentagon's advice or against it. But Republican Rand Paul says Trump's decision took courage.
We're in war in too many places. I commend the president for his decision.
Bob Moon, Bloomberg Daybreak.
North Korea says it will never unilaterally give up its nuclear weapons unless the U.S. first removes what Pyongyang calls a nuclear threat. The statement raises the stakes for President Trump's efforts to hold a second summit with Kim Jong-un. Russian President Vladimir Putin is warning about the rising threat of nuclear war. He made the comments at his annual news conference, pointing to the U.S. intention to withdraw from the 1987 INF treaty. On one of the busiest travel days of the year, London's Gatwick Airport is closed to aircraft. Multiple sightings of illegal drones disrupted flights for as many as 115,000 people. Hundreds slept on the floor of departure halls as police tried to determine whether the drones were still around. More than 50 incoming planes were diverted last night. Global news 24 hours a day on air and a TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Pat Carroll. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Pat, thank you. 6:09 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. Here's Rob Bushka.
Good morning, Nathan. The Nets grinded out another win on back-to-back nights. Dinwiddie inbounding. Play goes in motion. Dinwiddie out top, left side Harris. Pump fake. Drives a floater, and it's gone, and the Nets take the lead with 43 seconds to go. Nets Radio Network on the call. That floater turned out to be the game-winning shot as Brooklyn won in Chicago 96-93 to win their seventh straight. Three starters scored in double figures for Brooklyn, and they were all outdone, though, by Spencer Dinwiddie, who had 27 points off the bench. Knicks weren't as fortunate in Philadelphia. Too much of former number one overall Ben Simmons.
Ben Simmons driving on Bonley, knocks him away and jams him with the right hand and then stares him down.
Sixers Radio Network 131-109 as Simmons was one of four starters for Philadelphia to reach double figures. Sixers balanced offensively as they scored at least 30 points in all four quarters. Knicks were wiped out on the glass too, 51-35. Tim Hardaway Jr. led New York with 27 points in a losing cause. Baseball, the Yankees got a visit from free agent infielder Manny Machado on Wednesday. The two sides met at the stadium for an hour and a half. The four-time All-Star met with the White Sox on Monday and will wrap up his tour with the Phillies on Thursday. Frozen floor, just two games. Sidney Crosby and the Penguins doubled up the Capitals in Washington 2-1. Crosby notched his 16th goal of the year. Colorado stopped Montreal 2-1. And college football, Ohio shut out San Diego State 27-0 in the Frisco Bowl. That's your NBC Bloomberg Sports Update. Nathan?
All right, Rob, thank you. In other sports news, Cuba has inked an historic agreement with Major League Baseball. The Cuban Baseball Federation will become the fourth foreign professional baseball league to give players a legal path to sign with U.S. teams. The deal is similar to agreements Major League Baseball has with leagues in Japan, Korea, and China. Futures little changed right now with S&P futures down a quarter point, Dow futures down 8. NASDAQ futures up 7 points. Price of the 10-year down 4/32. The yield 2.76%. Two-year treasuries at 2.65%. Stay with us. Bloomberg Daybreak continues. This is Bloomberg. And it's coming up on 6:12 on Wall Street. Straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak, more insights into the Federal Reserve's rate decision. Joe Weisenthal joins us. He's head of the America's News Desk at Bloomberg News. This is Bloomberg.
Global news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. Stocks are dropping in Europe and Asia as investors express concern about a lack of relief from the Federal Reserve's monetary tightening. The yen is climbing to its strongest since mid-October. Oil is falling. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures, they have trimmed their declines. Little change this morning. Dow futures down 2. NASDAQ futures up about 10. The DAX in Germany is down 1%. 10-year treasury down 4/32. Yield 2.76%. Yield on the two-year 2.66%. NYMEX crude oil down 3.2% on $1.55 to $46.63 a barrel. COMEX gold is up 0.2%, up $2.70 to $12.59 an ounce. The euro $1.1475 and the yen 111.68. Airbus shares slumping following a French report that the U.S. Department of Justice has officially started an investigation into the European plane maker in parallel with British and French bribery probes. And today we are watching for the weekly report on initial jobless claims out at 8:30 Wall Street time and 9:45 the Bloomberg Consumer Comfort Index and at 10 leading economic indicators. Nike among companies scheduled to report earnings today. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Pat Carroll with more on what's going on around the world. Pat.
Karen, the Senate approves legislation to avoid a partial government shutdown and fund the government into February, putting off the president's border wall. President Trump is defending his decision to pull out of Syria, but doesn't say if airstrikes will continue and gives no timetable for withdrawal. North Korea says it won't disarm unless the U.S. removes nuclear weapons from the Korean Peninsula. In sports, in the NBA, the Nets beat the Bulls, Knicks lost to the Sixers, Celtics fell to the Suns, Wizards lost to the Rockets, and Golden State fell to Utah. On the ice, the Capitals fell to the Penguins. Global news, 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Pat Carroll. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
6:19 on Wall Street. Pat, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. We're joined now by Joe Weisenthal, head of the America's News Desk at Bloomberg News. And speaking of falling, Joe, How about the market reaction to what it, I guess technically was a dovish hike from the Fed?
Yeah, pretty extraordinary sell-off yesterday in the wake of that Fed announcement, really intensifying during the press conference from Chairman Jay Powell. It's right, it was dovish in a sense. So they did hike rates, but they also sort of lowered their expectations of how many rate hikes they'll see in 2019. But that was kind of the extent of the dovishness, that lowering. There was not much acknowledgement of the market volatility and the effect that that might have in slowing the economy. There was not much explanation for why rates needed to go up with inflation subdued. So there was a little bit of a sense of the Fed being on autopilot. And then speaking of autopilot, Chairman Powell made it clear that another aspect of Fed policy, which is the sort of rundown of the balance sheet. Remember, the Fed really bloated its balance sheet during the quantitative easing period post-crisis. Now they're trying to reverse that. That's not going to be changed. So that will steadily drip down every month, regardless of policy. That is not up for debate right now.
Yeah. At the same time, though, he did indicate at least that he acknowledged that, you know, market economic conditions could change and
he did.
And cause the Fed to alter its policy path somewhat. Why didn't that give the markets at least, something of a bit of a bone to throw at them?
Yeah, that's an excellent question, because he was pretty clear that if the economic conditions do change in 2019 from where they see them right now, that the Fed is ready and willing to change its path. He specifically cited the experience they had in 2016 when going into the year. They had foreseen four rate hikes. They only did one rate hike that year due to changes in the actual economic data. So I think there's no question, or there shouldn't be much question, that the Fed is watching the data. But again, I guess it comes back to the question of, like, why hike in the first place? And that does sort of feel as though there's still, all things being equal, on a hiking path until proven otherwise.
Yeah, I wonder whether the strategy that Powell has put out there of being more plain-spoken is almost kind of creating a counterintuitive environment for the market when, the markets have been so used to sort of parsing the tea leaves with the Fed. And then, you know, when Powell does come out with a statement like we're going to keep the balance sheet unwind on autopilot, that, you know, it's like the markets don't know how to take it.
It's an interesting question, because Powell is very refreshing in that respect, in that he speaks clearly. It's sophisticatedly, but in a way that could be understood by everyone. But it is interesting that the market has now sold off, according to some research from Bespoke Investment Group, seven straight times that he's given press conferences. And that's very different than the Yellen era, because if you recall, under Yellen, markets were very unvolatile during her press conferences and often didn't move. They didn't move much at all. Now, there could be different reasons for that, different macroeconomic conditions, different goals. Nonetheless, you can't argue the market does seem to have a consistently negative take on him, even if it is impressively clear.
Yeah, consistently volatile, I guess.
Yeah, exactly right.
I mean, does that sort of play into how the market has been behaving as we've seen of late?
Sure.
As far as the Fed's comments.
Absolutely. I mean, I think one of the pivotal events of this year was on October 3rd, when Powell said that he thought that rates remained a significant way away from neutral. And if you look at a lot of charts, you see a lot of different stocks really start to deteriorate right after those comments. So a lot of the popular tech stocks basically started falling off a cliff right after October 3rd and Powell made those comments. So, yeah, I don't think there's any question that, you know, there's a lot going on right now, obviously, trade and the calendar, but that comments that we've received from the Fed in the final quarter of this year have, by and large, not been particularly soothing to the market. But again, it's not the Fed's job to soothe the market.
Right.
It's the Fed's job. It has a dual mandate to deliver on price stability and full employment. And when they look at the data, the direct data on how they're doing, they're like, you know what, it's working. And so they're not going to be spooked by the market per se, but if the market volatility feeds through to real economic volatility and economic weakness, then I think that's when you would expect to see a meaningful shift in their behavior.
It'd be very interesting to see how the market reacts today. Joe Weisenthal, head of the America's News Desk at Bloomberg News. Thanks for being here this morning. A morning where futures contracts are now pointing higher at the moment. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Good morning. And it is 6:25 on Wall Street. Stay with us here on Bloomberg Daybreak. We'll get the latest check on the markets, the latest business headlines, and more reaction to the Fed's rate decision. This is Bloomberg. Good morning.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130 to Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 991 to Boston. Bloomberg 1061 to San Francisco. Bloomberg 960 to the country. Sirius XM Channel 119 and around the globe. The Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
6:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. We are just about 3 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. Stocks around the world are falling after a decision from the Federal Reserve viewed as less dovish than expected. The central bank raised rates while paring its forecast to 2 hikes next year.
Europe's Stock 600 is down about 0.8%, while U.S. stock futures are slightly higher after yesterday's slump. Guggenheim Chief Investment Officer Scott Minard is concerned the recent sell-off could become a systematic problem.
I think we're running the risk here that this can move towards something systemic. The fact that it's becoming harder and harder to find the marginal buyers in credit is telling us that there isn't enough liquidity in the system. If this continues long enough, we could be subject to a severe asset price break, which was by definition a systemic decline.
The S&P 500 finished the day down 1.5%, while the Nasdaq slid more than 2%.
Most emerging market currencies weakened following the Fed decision, and that has one prominent investor giving the central bank a failing grade. Bloomberg's Christine Burke reports.
Heyman founder Kyle Bass said that the Fed really was not dovish enough for emerging markets, actually said that Jerome Powell flunked the test, considering that emerging markets are flashing red. And when you look to emerging markets, they probably just needed to see a bit more softness if they're going to get any real boost from this.
Chairman Powell suggested he'll be more cautious about raising rates next year, but investors wanted more.
Oil is falling as the Fed stokes fears about economic growth at a time when investors face a supply glut. Checking prices now, West Texas Intermediate is down 3.2% or $1.55 lower at $46.62 a barrel. Brent down 3.2% as well, down $1.85 at $55.39.
Sweden's currency is strengthening after the central bank raised rates for the first time in 7 years. The Riksbank added a quarter of a percentage point to its repo rate.
And the yen is stronger after the Bank of Japan left policy unchanged. Japanese stocks entered a bear market following the decision with a 2.5% loss for the TOPIX. It is 6:32 on Wall Street. Time for the Volatility Index report. The VIX finished the day yesterday, believe it or not, unchanged at 25.58. Separately, in today's extended morning trading, the VIX is currently at 24.81. Karen, that is this morning's Volatility report.
All right, thanks, Nathan. And futures are higher. S&P futures up 4 points, Dow futures up 30, and NASDAQ futures up 15, reversing an earlier decline. The DAX in Germany is down 1%. 10-year Treasury down 4/32nds, yield 2.76%. Straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news, and this is Bloomberg.
All right, thanks again, Karen. It is 6:33 on Wall Street, and Pat Carroll is here to let us know what's happening in the world. Pat?
Nathan, Russian President Vladimir Putin is welcoming President Trump's decision to withdraw forces from Syria. Speaking at his annual news conference, Putin says he agrees with President Trump, who says the defeat of ISIS removes the need for the U.S. military presence in Syria. Russia is a key ally of Syrian President Assad, and its military intervention beginning in 2015 turned the tide of the war in Assad's favor. Facing a bipartisan backlash at home, President Trump posted a Twitter video last night defending his decision to pull out of Syria.
We've beaten them, and we've beaten them badly. We've taken back the land, and now it's time for our troops to come back home.
The announcement leaves key details unanswered, including a timetable for withdrawal, whether all troops will be pulled out, and whether airstrikes will continue. And Republican Senator Lindsey Graham says the decision betrays our Kurdish allies. The Senate has approved legislation to avoid a partial government shutdown, Bloomberg's John Tucker reports.
The temporary funding keeps the government open until February 8th. The House will now take up the measure, and leaders from both parties have signaled support. Last night's vote puts off confrontation over President Trump's proposed $5 billion border wall, and Democrats will be in control of the House when the temporary funding expires. Members of the conservative House Freedom Caucus say the president's political base will be angry if he signs a bill without funding for the wall. If the measure isn't enacted, 9 government departments will run out of funding Friday night. John Tucker, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Special Counsel Robert Mueller has asked the House Intelligence Committee for the Roger Stone transcript, Bloomberg's Ed Baxter reports.
This is the closed-door interview in 2017 with the committee. Stone is a longtime advisor to President Trump. This is the first time Mueller has asked the intelligence panel to turn over testimony from the now shuttered investigation of Russian election meddling. So the committee is scheduled to talk about this in a special meeting titled Transmission of Certain Executive Session Materials to the Executive Branch. Stone has responded, oh, they don't have them. So this has evolved into semantical word games, partisan hair splitting, and non-material perjury traps. Stone has also maintained he did not collude with the Russians. In San Francisco, I'm Ed Baxter, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Global news, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Pat Carroll. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Pat, thank you. It is 6:35 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update with Rob Buschka.
Good morning, Nathan. Number 7 in a row for Brooklyn as the Nets edged the Bulls in the waning moments, 96-93 in Chicago. Coach Kenny Atkinson says they grinded it out.
We were stuck in mud a little bit. Our offense was not its usual, spry and dynamic offense. Great job of grinding it out.
Spencer Dinwiddie earning that new contract extension. He scored 27 to lead Brooklyn. The Knicks ran into an offensive juggernaut in Philadelphia as the upstart Sixers scored 30 or more in each quarter en route to a 131-109 win. Former number one overall pick Ben Simmons impresses in so many ways, said Knicks coach David Fizdale.
A rare player that can play point guard, but he's 6'9", and he's a power forward in his body. You know, it's very similar to LeBron that way, so... You know, Noah's our best matchup for him. You know, the same way we match Noah on Giannis. And I thought he did a solid job for a power forward trying to guard a point guard.
Tim Hardaway Jr. scored 27 in a losing effort. Another NBA note, the Houston Rockets hit an NBA record 26 three-pointers as they beat the Wizards 136-118 behind 35 from James Harden. The Bronx came alive for about 90 minutes on Wednesday in anticipation of what may become. Free agent infielder Manny Machado met with the Yankees. He's already visited the White Sox and will be in Philadelphia later today before making up his mind. The four-time All-Stars played for the Orioles and Dodgers. And that's your NBC Bloomberg Sports Update. Nathan?
Rob, thank you. 6:37 on Wall Street.
The following is an editorial from Bloomberg Opinion.
The Trump administration's plan to pull all U.S. troops out of Syria is a mistake with potentially serious consequences. The fight against Islamic State isn't over, contrary to President Trump's assertions. U.S. troops are vital to the Kurdish forces that are leading that fight, and Trump's decision comes days after Turkish President Erdogan revealed that his troops would soon launch an offensive against the Kurdish fighters. The White House should be saying no to this plan. Instead, Trump seems ready to leave America's ally at the mercy of Erdogan and of Syrian forces. The longer-term consequences are no better. America's most valuable geopolitical asset is its web of friends and allies. This delivers the message, America will let you down. In military and foreign affairs, as in politics, small choices can have expansive implications. Trump should reverse his decision on Syria. This editorial was written by the Bloomberg Editorial Board. I'm David Shipley. For more Bloomberg Opinion, please go to Bloomberg.com/opinion or OPI and go on the Bloomberg Terminal.
This has been Bloomberg Opinion.
And you can hear Bloomberg Opinion editorials every weekday at this time. It is 6:38 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg Green Report. Here's Bob Moon.
Electric cars could cost the same as gas-burning vehicles within the next 5 years. That's a year earlier than previously anticipated because of falling battery prices, according to a new Bloomberg New Energy Finance survey. The report finds prices for electric vehicle lithium-ion battery packs could drop below $100 per kilowatt hour by then. And at that price, many electric cars are expected to roughly equal gasoline-powered models, though won't be true for every electric car on the market. Analyst James Frith says it's not that all EVs are suddenly at price parity, but it's a sign the price is declining faster than expected. Lithium-ion battery pack prices have tumbled 85% since 2010, but still have a way to go. They averaged $176 a kilowatt hour this year. By 2030, the survey finds, they could drop to $62. That's the Bloomberg Green Business Report. I'm Bob Moon.
All right, Bob, thank you. Coming up today, the U.S. government issues its weekly report on jobless claims that it's due out at 8:30 a.m. Wall Street time. Economists forecast claims rose by 9,000 last week. Bloomberg's Vinny Del Giudice reports.
Jobless claims have been running close to a half-century low, and the recent run-up has raised concerns America's labor market is reversing course. Not so, says Bloomberg Economics, noting the prior week's sharp drop to 206,000 claims suggests seasonal quirks are distorting the data. That's common around the holidays. Vinny Del Giudice, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Vinny, thank you. And taking a look at markets, they're reversing course from the steep losses following Fed Chairman Jay Powell's decision. The futures on the S&P are pointed higher now, with S&P futures ahead by 6 points. Dow futures up 48 points. NASDAQ futures higher by 24 points. Price of the 10-year Treasury is down 4/32nds. The yield at 2.77%. Two-year Treasuries at 2.66%. NYMEX crude down 3%, down $1.48 at $46.71 a barrel. COMEX gold is nearly 0.3% higher, $3.60 higher at $1,260. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. And Bloomberg Daybreak is brought to you by Benzel Busch Motor Car Corporation in beautiful Englewood, New Jersey. A true luxury experience. Benzel Busch is where luxury lives. Experience the elevated standard you deserve. Visit BenzelBusch.com.
Global news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow, and stocks are falling in Europe and Asia as investors express concern about a lack of relief from the Federal Reserve's monetary tightening. Meanwhile, U.S. stock index futures have reversed their declines and are moving higher. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures up 6.5 points this morning. Dow futures up 49. NASDAQ futures up 22. The DAX in Germany is down 0.8%. 10-year Treasury down 4/32nds, yield 2.77%. Yield on the two-year, 2.66%. NYMEX crude oil is down 3.2% on $1.52 to $46.64 a barrel. COMEX gold is up 0.25%, up $2.80 to $12.59.20 an ounce. The euro, $1.1466. The yen, 111.68. We are watching today for the weekly report on initial jobless claims out at 8:30 Wall Street time. Then at 9:45, it's a Bloomberg Consumer Comfort Index at 10 leading economic indicators. And Nike is among companies scheduled to report earnings today. Also, Airbus shares have been slumping following a French report that the U.S. Department of Justice has officially started an investigation into the European plane maker in parallel with British and French bribery probes. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Pat Carroll with more on what's going on around the world. Pat.
Karen, the Senate last night approved a plan to fund the government into the new year. President Trump defends his claim that ISIS is defeated in the face of bipartisan backlash. Russian President Putin is welcoming Trump's decision. In sports, in the NBA, the Nets beat the Bulls. Knicks lost to the Sixers. Celtics fell to the Suns. Wizards lost to the Rockets. And Golden State fell to Utah. On the ice, the Capitals fell to the Penguins. Finally, from Daybreak on the Bloomberg Terminal, from birds to drones, London's Gatwick Airport remains closed on one of the busiest travel days after sightings of illegal drones last night. Police believe it's a deliberate act to disrupt the airport.
Yeah, and from what I understand, this is still going on, right?
Yeah,
I mean, the airport's still closed. They're looking for these drones.
People slept on the floor last night in
crazy.
The airport. Crazy times. Global news 24 hours a day on air and a TikTok on Twitter powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Pat Carroll. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
All right, Pat, thank you. We are live from the Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studios. We're at 6:49 on Wall Street. Time to check what's going on in D.C. Some of the top stories in our nation's capital include the Senate voting to avert a partial government shutdown with a 7-week stopgap spending measure. President Trump shocking his own advisors with a Syria withdrawal that he's long pushed for. And the Trump administration preparing to lift sanctions on Russian aluminum maker Rusal after its billionaire owner Oleg Deripaska agreed to sharply cut his stake. Also making news this morning, special counsel Robert Mueller's endgame. For more on this, we're joined by Bloomberg Washington reporter Kathleen Hunter. Kate, Mueller's built his case little by little against people in President Trump's circle. What does this mean for the president himself? Is Mueller closing in quickly?
Well, I think really it's going to be a slower burn than that is what we found out. And so I think that in some of these upcoming court filings, we're maybe not likely to see Mueller either directly or indirectly mention Trump personally. But I think that doesn't mean also that the president's off the hook, because what it sounds like is that Mueller is actually kind of building his case brick by brick here, and that anything that implicates Trump personally might be making an appearance, its first appearance, in his final report to Congress. And that's significant because it's that report that Democrats, which are going to be in the majority come January, are going to be looking closely at as they consider whether or not to move forward with impeachment.
So do we have any idea at this point then what the timeline could be for that final report?
Well, I think the sort of broad sense is that we're likely looking at something in the first part of next year. I think that the flurry of activity that we've seen recently and the sort of expectation there's going to be sort of another wave of court filings kind of leaves the impression that, you know, Mueller may be, you know, well into his probe. And so, therefore, I think the sense is that, you know, early to mid next year would be likely to anticipate. But I think there also are folks who thought it'd be wrapped up by now. So no one really knows. Yeah. Robert Mueller.
Right. And just to carry on with your metaphor of a brick by brick case, what's the next brick we're looking for?
Well, I think that one of the things that we're likely to see is some additional, you know, kind of movement on the front that we saw a little bit today this week, where, you know, there was the indictment unsealed against some associates of former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn. So we may see more development in those cases that involves two of his former associates and deals with his, you know, the ties to Turkey and the work that those associates did on behalf of Erdogan's government. So we may see some movement on those fronts. And also, you know, as we know, Michael Flynn's sentencing was delayed, and so that is likely to happen, you know, in the coming weeks. And so that would be another, you know, development in the near future to look for.
All right, let's look at now to the development that we saw yesterday, and we're continuing to see play out this morning. President Trump's decision to withdraw U.S. forces from Syria. The president, as we speak, is tweeting about it, defending himself. Among the things that he's saying in his tweets is that he says getting out of Syria was no surprise. He's been campaigning on it for years. Russia, Iran, Syria, and others are the local enemy of ISIS. We were doing their work. Time to come home and rebuild. Not exactly getting the most positive reaction, though, from many of his allies on Capitol Hill.
That's right. And so I think that, you know, both the president's aides in the White House and in the administration and folks on Capitol Hill, Republicans who typically are Trump's allies, were all sort of caught off guard by this. And so I think that in a lot of ways, what we're seeing is, you know, a positive response out of Moscow and out of Tehran. And so it sounds like potentially this development is at least being viewed positively there. And so, you know, in some ways, Trump may have either purposely or indirectly handed Putin a bit of a victory here.
Yeah, and it's interesting to see this decision come out as Russian President Vladimir Putin is holding right now his end-of-the-year news conference. He was asked about it moments ago, and his reaction was, Donald's right, and I agree with him.
Yeah, and that's in some ways, you know, some of this is a bit reminiscent of, you know, Trump's interaction with Putin in Helsinki over the summer, where, you know, seemed to be a whole lot of agreement between the two men, and, you know, Trump was pretty widely panned in terms of his performance for not being necessarily willing to challenge Putin, or for, in that case, siding with Putin when it came to questions about whether or not Russia had meddled in the election. So, you know, again, the timing of this is interesting because it comes the same week that we got two reports on the extent of Russian meddling, and it was more extensive than we'd previously realized. And so I think that, you know, Trump then taking these actions in Syria that, you know, Putin is essentially applauding, I think even, you know, the optics of that are not good. And in some ways, it kind of reinforces the idea that, you know, Trump is giving some leverage to Putin in the Middle East and beyond.
And in our last 30 seconds here, what does this mean for U.S. strategy in the Middle East?
Well, I think that it really puts the U.S. in some ways, you know, Putin has been really trying to increase his sphere of influence in the Middle East. And I think this action, you know, helps him to solidify that. And, you know, in some ways can be read as putting the U.S. at a disadvantage.
Bloomberg Washington reporter Kathleen Hunter, thanks as always. You can read more about these stories from Washington on Bloomberg.com. or on the Bloomberg Terminal. And a reminder, you can follow all the latest on Bloomberg Radio right from the nation's capital, tuning in on your radio at Bloomberg 99.1 and 105.7 FM HD2. It's 6:55 on Wall Street.
The following commentary is from Bloomberg Opinion.
I'm Jonathan Bernstein, a columnist for Bloomberg Opinion. President Trump's border wall died yet another death this week as the White House retreated from last week's boasts about shutting down the government over it. Realistically, the wall has been dead for months, and perhaps since last year. Trump's renewed bluster served only to demonstrate how weak he is and to weaken him further for the next round of bargaining. Who's going to believe him after so many empty threats? The wall, in fact, offers a good example of how Trump just isn't very good at presidenting. The White House doesn't have the organization or discipline to push anything to the top of the congressional agenda and keep it there. Trump hasn't demonstrated competent bargaining skills. He asks for the impossible, lashes out at allies and opponents, fails to grasp where the votes are, doesn't seem to know what the other players want that he can get them, and folds easily. His frequent idle threats only hurt his reputation and strengthen the resolve of those he deals with. I'm Jonathan Bernstein. For more opinion, please go to Bloomberg.com/opinion or OPINGO on the Bloomberg Terminal.
This has been Bloomberg Opinion.
You can hear Bloomberg Opinion editorials every weekday at this time, Karen.
Thanks, Nathan. It's 6:56 on Wall Street. It's time for the Bloomberg Small Business Report, and here's John Tucker. John.
With just days till Christmas, it's worth it to take the pulse of small business retailers. The anecdotal suggests brisk sales. On an early Tuesday afternoon in Shrewsbury, New Jersey, Greg Masenko was crazy busy ringing up sales at his locally licensed Billabong surf and clothing store. He's on track to tie or even outpace his best year ever.
The secret is knowing what you're doing, I mean, and being authentic. We are a real surf shop here, so we know we are very knowledgeable about all the hard goods, the surfboards, the wetsuits, the skateboards. We have passion behind what we do. We feel that we're selling really good quality and knowledge at a good price, and for that, we don't need the discount.
He wants his customers and even his employees to feel like they're at home. As for the Internet, he calls it the evil empire and says it won't destroy a small business that has good service and a quality product. And that's the Bloomberg Small Business Report.
All right, John, thank you. And again, futures have turned around this morning. S&P futures now up 4 points. Dow futures up 25. NASDAQ futures up about 18. The DAX in Germany is down 0.9%. 10-year Treasury down 4/32, yield 2.76%. Yield on the 2-year, 2.66%. And NYMEX crude oil falling down 3.33%. And straight ahead, it's Bloomberg Surveillance with Tom Keene and Jonathan Farrow. For Nathan Hager, I'm Karen Moscow, and this is Bloomberg.